This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick, sitting in for John Hockenberry today. Thank you so much for listening. In this hour, the president heads north. The fragile Arctic gets political as northern powers try to grab a piece of its energy resources, plus the politics of coal further south. In the lower 48, taxpayers miss out on billions in payments from coal pulled from federal land. And some reflections of our own time on this planet as we remember the life and death of neurologist Dr. Oliver Sacks. Some of you are sharing what you learned about life from him.
Hi, my name is Debbie Hemingway. I live in Winters, California. I find that the less that I think about myself and the more kindness that I can show to others, the more worthwhile I then believe my own life to be.
And from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Dr. Sacks so richly nurtured a sense of mystery and how we know more and more about how we know less and less. You can join the conversation, too. Tell us what makes your life worthwhile. Call us at 8778-MY-TAKE. But we begin today with President Obama, who heads to Alaska and becomes the first American president to visit the Arctic. In Alaska, the president is addressing a meeting of Arctic nation foreign ministers from Russia and Norway, Canada, the United States and others, as well as a roundtable of Alaskan natives. It's a trip designed to show, literally show, visually, the parts of the country where climate change isn't a theory, but a fact that's going on right now. Meanwhile, in a kind of goodwill gesture toward the Native community, the president announced on Sunday that Mount McKinley, the highest mountain peak in North America that looms at just over 20,000 feet and was named for President William McKinley, will be formally renamed Denali, restoring an Alaskan Native name and a name that most locals use anyway. But as rising temperatures, extensive wildfires, and melting sea ice are reshaping the shoreline at a very quick pace, many Alaska Natives are stepping up to warn of overdevelopment and exploitation of the resources of the region. Here's Yvonne Peter, an Alaska Native leader, speaking to the BBC over the weekend.
I think that it really is important for us to slow things down. And what that looks like is in the initial time saying, okay, let's protect this area for a 10, 15-year period as we do the science, as we have the conversations, rather than letting it be this kind of frontier mentality where all the countries try to rush in to do as much development and first. So I think we can't allow an unwieldy level of competition or distrust between nations or multinational corporations to guide how we move into the Arctic.
So how we move into the Arctic, whether we drill and how we drill for oil, is one of the biggest questions facing countries like the United States and Canada. As Russia continues to step up claims for larger portions of the Arctic Ocean and receding ice cover exposes previously frozen land in Greenland, Siberia, Norway, and other countries. For more on the geopolitical strategy of the U.S. and Arctic countries in the region, we spoke with Katarzyna Zisk. She's associate professor at the Norwegian Defense University College in Oslo. She's also a member of the Arctic Security Initiative at the Hoover Institute at Stanford University. She's joined by Edward Struzik, a Canadian journalist. He's also author of Future Arctic, Field Notes from a World on the Edge. And he says the president is up against a dilemma and a rising set of challenges in the region.
It's astonishing to see that the Arctic that we once knew in Alaska and northern Canada is quickly disappearing and a new Arctic is unfolding. And it's all pretty much the result of climate change.
But Alaska is also the very epitome of the dilemma, isn't it? Because climate change is real, is happening. The president will stand in front of glaciers that have disappeared. He will go to villages that are flooding because of sea level rise. At the same time, Alaska has enormous economic reliance on fossil fuels and enormous political pressure on the White House to expand drilling, which he has done. And therein lies the conflict. The very people who are confronting climate change right now need and want drilling.
Well, it's true, but I think the lessons of the past suggest that we need to learn from them. Alaska, you know, was graced by the Prudhoe Bay oil field that lasted almost forever, and now it's starting to deplete, and they're looking for new ways of finding energy, and it's becoming very expensive and very dangerous. And I liken it to what's happened here in Alberta with the oil sands. The Alberta economy relied on the oil sands for so long and so much that now that oil prices have collapsed, the economy has just collapsed along with it.
Katarzyna Zisk, at the same time, President Obama, while making a visual display out of climate change, has recently signed off on expanded drilling for Royal Dutch Shell in northern Alaska. And this is part of a much bigger picture because you've been writing about Russia and its advances on its continental shelf. The geopolitics of the Arctic is changing fast, and the gold rush is on here.
That's true. We have seen an increasing interest basically from all Arctic countries, and not only the Arctic countries around the Arctic Ocean, the United States, Canada, Norway, Denmark, but also other stakeholders like for instance, the Asian countries, China, South Korea, India. So there has been an increased interest in the region because of the energy resources, but also because of the climate change. And also the Russian policies, especially since 2007, have been more assertive, which also turned the attention of the international community, and especially the Arctic countries, toward the region.
I remember seeing a picture in 2007 of a Russian flag, a metal Russian flag, on the bottom of the seabed under the North Pole. The Russians planted it there to show the world, this is ours. Has the United States been slow to the land grab or the melting ice grab that's going on in the Arctic?
Well, in general, the Obama administration has devoted steadily more attention to the region. There is no doubt about that. There is a number of documents like Arctic Regional Policy, National Strategy for the region that has been adopted recently. Several documents underline the importance of the Arctic region. But at the same time, the budgetary action is not there. There is simply no significant increase in money that would follow up the increased attention, at least rhetorically, for the Arctic region. Admiral Paul Sukhumvit, the Coast Guard commander, even said that actually the U.S. is not even in the game, which is kind of a significant statement, I think.
Yeah, it is significant. Edward Struzik, it's interesting what Katarzyna is saying, because if the Russians want to increase drilling in the Arctic, if the Russians think more access to warm water ports will be available where ice once froze the ocean, surely Alaskans are going to want part of that economic activity and part of that trade. And there's a deeper dilemma even there.
Well, I think that's the million-dollar question, is that do you invest billions, possibly trillions of dollars in developing the infrastructure you need to accommodate this kind of very expensive, very risky development? I say, you know, let's put that out for debate before we start drilling in these waters, because we have no ports in northern Alaska or anywhere in Arctic Canada to facilitate this kind of activity. So if there was an oil spill, how would you deal with it? I mean, in multi-year ice or even seasonal ice, it would be almost impossible to get up there and handle an oil spill or a natural gas well blowout on par with what happened in the Gulf of Mexico.
Katarzyna, is Vladimir Putin thinking of the kinds of concerns that Edward is discussing right now? Is he thinking, how do you drill safely? How do you invest billions in a warm water port and protect against a spill? Or is it basically a grab that's on and he's gone to the UN to stake his claim and put pressure on everybody else?
Definitely. There has been an increased awareness that this kind of accidents in the Arctic would be a disaster on a global scale. And Russia has been steadily more interested in devoting more attention to this kind of issues, developing search and rescue capability, for instance, along the Arctic coast. They are aware of that and they have been investing somewhat. However, this is still insufficient level. Most experts agree that we still do not have the necessary search and rescue, crisis management, human disaster capabilities that are necessary to act in case of, for instance, oil spill or other kinds of disaster. And this is extremely difficult region to operate in, and we are still not sufficiently prepared. Russia is not prepared either.
Edward Struzik, I know you're Canadian, but play American pundit for a second if you want to. The president is trying to build policies here at home for his climate change initiatives, carbon reduction, more efficient cars, coal plants, the Environmental Protection Agency. A lot of stuff's been going on domestically. He's also trying to build momentum going into the Paris conference in December, the global climate change conference. Does he risk some of that momentum if his message is mixed? If he stands in front of villages and towns where climate change is real, but of course the second line of everyone's report is that he just signed off on big new drilling deals along the Arctic coast.
Yeah, I think he has to make a clear choice here. And quite honestly, I think it's a fairly easy choice to make because of everything that we've talked about. The North American Arctic is just not ready for that kind of development that's taking or that is about to take place. And I think that he can simply say is that the time is just not right.
Katarzyna Zisk, what's that new vision look like to you? Is it confrontation and competition for resources and for oil, or is it mutual opportunity? Everybody's got lots of money to make if they do it right, and so all of a sudden Vladimir Putin has a reason to cooperate with the United States and Canada.
The short answer would be both. We still do not have any energy bonanza like many expected or mad dash for natural resources and territories in the Arctic. But on the other hand, we have certainly seen an increased interest and increased, let's say, sense of insecurity, not least in Russia. And Russia has been reacting to this increased international interest in the Arctic by strengthening its presence, also military presence, which, you know, in turn also strengthen the sense of insecurity in the other countries, especially that Russia has become so much more belligerent and assertive in security and defense and foreign policies. And we have also seen that the Arctic is also very vulnerable to spillover effects from other crises in the world, like the Ukrainian crisis, which has affected security situation in the Arctic as well. There is less contact between Russia and the other countries. There is more tension. The military activities has increased. So as of today, I wouldn't say that there is a big danger for conflict in the Arctic or over the Arctic territories. But the Arctic is, again, remains very vulnerable to spillover effects, and they affect the regional stability negatively.
Changing ecology, changing climate, and rapidly changing geopolitics between the countries around the Arctic. Edward Struzik, Canadian journalist and author of Future Arctic Field Notes from A World on Edge. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Katarzyna Zisk, associate professor at the Norwegian Defense University in Oslo. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.